Welcome to Global Minnesota Podcasts, connecting, informing, and engaging Minnesotans with the world and exploring important international issues. For a complete list of programs and to join us, visit globalminnesota.org.
And joining Dr. Schuler will be Dr. Coy Gross. Coy is a sociologist on the faculty of the College of St. Benedict and St. John's University. She serves as assistant professor in environmental studies. She's a native of Idaho and specializes in climate and environmental justice studies, sustainable development, and gender and social inequities. She is joined by one of her students, Xia Zhang. She will tell you how to really pronounce it, who is a senior communication major at the College of St. Benedict and is originally from Chengdu, China. So we're going to be joining them, and somebody is in the audience with a mic. Is that for questions? So anyway, we're going to have a round of opening remarks from Coy and from Xia, and then we'll take your questions. So, Coy.
We're sharing a mic up here.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming out tonight. So Jay asked me to kind of tell a little bit about our institutions and our program, where we actually take a whole class of students every year to the COP. So I'll start out with the mission of our institutions. So we're from the College of St. Benedict and St. John's University. We are two institutions, small liberal arts colleges, really committed to liberal arts education in the Catholic and Benedictine tradition. And the other key piece of our mission really is to really help students engage in leadership roles in some of the most pressing issues that we face as a global community. So our mission at St. Ben's is to think critically, lead courageously, and advocate passionately. So these things really align with going to the UN climate conferences for a number of reasons. So the Catholic tradition, Pope Francis, and his encyclical letter on caring for creation makes the case that we really need to address climate change as a global community for social justice reasons. The Benedictine tradition has 12 values, and many of them resonate with climate justice. So just a few of them are community living, justice, moderation, peace, respect for persons, and stewardship. And then we, in general, just have a commitment to also global education experiences and just, you know, helping students really engage with these debates in the real world. So we have about 2,000 students at each campus, and we have women living on one campus and men living on the other campus, but the residential situation is the only thing that's separate. The academics are totally together, so that's why you hear us say these two institutions, College of St. Benedict and St. John's University. So I teach at both of them, technically. So we have been part of, we've actually been formal observers to the UN negotiations on climate change since COP21 in Paris, so the big climate conference there. It's quite a process to become formal observers to the conference, and it's not something that all institutions have. So we're really quite privileged to have that situation, and it was all the work of a professor who her research had to do with UNFCCC and the COP, so she really helped us set that up. So we've been taking students to the COP since 2015. And the way we do it now, we have a 2-credit class that I teach in the fall. So the class meets once a week, and we have 21 students, and we did have 21 students in the class this fall. And the 10 students go the first week of the COP with one faculty leader, and then 10 students go the second week of the COP with another faculty leader. And in the class, we learn about climate science, climate policy, and then all the students develop an independent research project on something related to climate change that they can study at the COP. So they do a lot of background review of scholarly literature and debates around that topic. And then when they go to the COP, they all interview at least 3 people, 2 of whom are from outside the US or Europe. So we're really encouraging them to, you know, make use of this wonderful opportunity where there are people from all over the world just walking around the hallways. It's I think that's one of the best parts about the COP for young people. And then they write their papers, and then they are also tasked with coming back to their home communities, which for most of them is Minnesota, where they then share about the COP and their research over Christmas break. they also present on our campus community. So again, we really want them to be bringing this global experience back to the local level through their research to show how these two things are connected. So we are part of a number of different kind of sustainability initiatives, both of our campuses. College of St. Benedict in particular is part of the We Are Still In coalition that you heard Jay speak about. And the reason for this really is it just, again, really resonates with our mission. And I think for President Mary Hinton, we have two separate presidents as well. For Dr. Hinton, it's really sustainability and living our values are a really key priority. So that's why we are part of We Are Still In. And then finally, I'll close with just what I think our students get out of these COPs. And so I think many of them told me afterwards that it really was just a life-changing experience, which I'm sure you can imagine. Young people actually being inside the UN negotiations, brushing arms with policymakers, with activists from all over the world, quite powerful. So they get to experience different cultures. They get to actually participate with policymakers and with activists, with social movements, which is something that I think a lot of our students hadn't experienced before. So that was really valuable. And being able to bring this knowledge back to their home communities. And then finally, I think they gain both, I think, hope and then a little bit of disillusionment that happens after a COP too when it's your first COP. And I experienced this myself. This was my second COP. I went to COP 19, which also happened to be in Poland. So I'll start with the less hopeful piece, I think, is that when you go to a UN conference, it's hard to learn everything there is to know about COPs and UNs before you go. You kind of experience it while you're there. But there's really only so much the United Nations can do. It doesn't have teeth, really, to enforce a lot of its policies. And there's a consensus process, so everyone has to agree, which kind of limits really ambitious agreements. So I think where the action really is at the local level. That's really where we can make these really great commitments, and then I think that eventually could trickle up to the global level. So that's something that, after your first COP, you come away with kind of pondering that question of what can the UN do? But then I think it motivates people to get involved on the local level. However, they also come along with a lot of hope, realizing, especially in the context of our administration at the federal level right now, that there are people all over the world who really care about this issue and are doing a lot about it. So it makes students feel like they're not alone, and there's a whole global community behind us working on climate justice. So I will I'll hand the mic over.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh my gosh, it's kind of nervous. When I got the email, I really thought it was a group discussion. I did not thought it was a panel. Well, hello everyone. My name is Jia Zhen, and then pronouncing Chinese is Zheng Jia. So I'm a Chinese international student and currently senior from College of St. Benedict with communication major. So why I attend the COP? As a communication major, honestly, before I applied this program, I really don't know much about climate change at all. And then, but everyone is talking about it, on social media, such as President Trump just tweeted about where is global warming if Middle West is experiencing the cold weather. So I was really hoping to, by attending COP with Dr. Gross, to learn about this issue and really to bring more awareness to bring back to campus and the local community in Minnesota. And so what I was focused on was how climate change affecting rural women in China, because personally I'm also really, really passionate about gender equality, women's rights. And when I was in COP, and a lot of people were really questioning me, why you put climate change and gender together. So women are more vulnerable. This is it's common sense for everyone. And climate change are affecting those rural community who are really relied on those natural resources the most. So there's still a lot of people out there, they don't really understand how to bring those two connections together. And by attending this COP, what I took the most out of it was It was such a privilege to be able to attend the COP. And people who are struggling the most, who are suffering the most, are the forgotten one in the COP. Like, because you don't, like Jane said, there was four farmers was blamed to a COP in Paris. But when I was there, and it was my research topic, I did not find any Chinese like government or like an NGO like to representing ruling China, not even women. I mean, and then the same thing has also happened in a lot of other countries, like gender focused point person on climate change. A lot of countries don't even have one. And then, and also I was learned so much by talking to other women. Like there's also a lot of women from Asia. There was one specifically from Philippines, because in Philippines they suffered so much from typhoon, and because of climate change, she said, people in Philippines are so scared of typhoon because it seems like every typhoon becomes super typhoon, and then like she was telling me about how climate change, the relationship with prostitution, because of the typhoon happened so often, and they would create those camps for those survivors to live in those camp. And in those camps, it's kind of like a refugee camp. And you kind of have to share the bathroom with men. And or sometimes women have to walk like very far away to use their bathroom. And along those way, even in the dark, along those way, and then there would be like people are harassed, people being harassed or being assaulted, which is really, really sad to hear the story. And then also, like she also told me, because of the women like trying to survive, it's really hard for men even to find a job after typhoon. And then the men, the women in order to support their kids, they are like, there are open prostitution happen in the camp, in those like camp. So it was like, yeah. Like every time when I like think about it, I was thinking how many girls, women out there are like struggling, and then I'm here and then study and then like living in such a like nice room and with heat on, and I just feel like people really need taking climate change seriously and to do more about it. And then Cole was talking about hope. It was really depressing, like last semester to taking her class. Honestly, it was so depressing. But still, I went to COP, and there was so many amazing like youth over there, like a bunch of like really intelligent women from like Canada. I mean, from like all over the world, and then they're fighting for climate change. 3M announced their sustainability plan, and then like Jay, with all the people are still like fighting for it. So yeah, I'm like, I know I'm not out there alone, and then I still have people back me up. So, well, thank you everyone for coming today.
And I'm gonna make special now that Cora and Ja drove down here together from St. Ben's during the polar vortex. So I had people asking me today if we were gonna have this program tonight, and I said, they're coming. You bet we'll be there. So thank you for being here. Love to open it up for any questions that people have. And Tim has the mic.
While I'm moving the mic over here, if I could just ask each of you, all of you at COP, what country or individual or organization were you most impressed by or inspired by for the leadership or the vision that they brought to the COP?
I had the privilege of seeing former president of the Maldives, Mohamed Nasheed, speak. And if you haven't heard of him, there's a really wonderful documentary called The Island President. And he has been a climate leader for many years, but he was president of the Maldives in 2009 during COP15, which happened in Copenhagen, where people thought that they were going to have kind of a global climate treaty, and it fell through. But he was really kind of instrumental in trying to make that happen. He held a cabinet meeting underwater to raise awareness and kind of make a media spoof out of the fact that the Maldives will go underwater like so many other small island nations. And 350 COI.org hosted an event at the kind of outside COP space. There's always a space outside the formal negotiations for members of civil society and the public to engage. And they hosted an event with Mohamed Nasheed, and he's just an inspirational figure. He was overthrown in a coup after 2009, but now his party is back in power, and so he is now their lead climate negotiator. But he really kind of pushed the message that local action is where it's at, and that countries shouldn't water down their ambition just to reach agreements at the global level, but if they have something that they want to work on, you know, bilaterally or in a regional grouping, that they should go forward with those types of solutions. So that was kind of one message he had from that speech.
For me, because I went to a lot of gender-related events, and then so a lot of the events are hosted by this a group. It's called Women and the Gender Constituency, and it's under United Nations. They are really trying to bring a lot of indigenous women together from all over the world, a lot of them from countries I've even never heard of, and to share their personal story to those people who are making the decisions, because like a lot of those indigenous women, they don't have the finance support. Like, it's so expensive to go to a COP. Like, personally, I was like crying to pay that. And then, like, even though I was doing the research on from China to COP, you probably, for those 2 weeks, that you have to spend like $3,500 just for those 2 weeks. And so a lot of, it's like more than a lot of rural women or rural families' annual family income. So that was really great to see. There are groups are trying to bring the women in the front line to the COP and then making sure their voice to be heard. So that was really cool to see all the events, all the people they brought together. Yeah, I think it was just so like life-changing experience. And then, yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Should I ask my question or?
Oh, I'll just take a quick minute then. So since you both picked events outside the COP, and there's a lot going on outside the COP, inside, one of the things that struck me is there's a large expo area. And there's approximately 200 countries have big booths. You saw photos from Jay's talk on the booth from Poland. That was striking to see coral heavily displayed. But all different countries. Now, the U.S. doesn't have one. But pretty much every other country you can think of is there, whether it's across Europe or China or various countries in Africa and so on. The one that struck me most was actually India's. I thought they did a fantastic job of bringing forward the technologies and ways to help solve challenges and advance renewable energies and improve efficiencies just for a more sustainable world for such a populous country.
I wanted to thank you very much, and I share your concern about women's issues because they intersect with climate issues constantly. And the McKnight Foundation funded a study of what Minnesota would look like in 2050, and it's extremely positive and optimistic. I mean, energy prices go down 30% and so forth. However, carbon emissions keep rising globally. I mean, even in the U.S., carbon emissions are going up, and I tend to suspect that there's got to be a political solution. If this were a scientific problem, we would have solved it 30 years ago. So I wondered if you would comment on the political ramifications of what you learned in Poland. That's a political question, and maybe it's inappropriate, and if it is, that's okay too.
Yeah, well thank you, and I'll start. I'll take it as a policy question. So back in Bonn last year, what we found is when we brought in a set of panelists, including Target, including the Dayton administration and the legislature, people were just astonished in Germany to hear that in Minnesota, our biggest utility has set a goal for 85% carbon reduction and was well on the way to achieving that, had a plan to do that. And that's a kind of performance-based standard that the company has set for itself. It's something that we think the state should set for all utility companies, because we think performance-based standards, you have a way to track them, you have a way to assure that you're meeting that standard, and everyone is held to the same account. So we think that's really important. Example with regard to rising emissions is here in the city of Minneapolis, and in the whole state, we have rising transportation emissions. About half of that is from passenger cars and SUVs. So I know a lot of my friends who live in Minneapolis are unaware that emissions from cars are increasing in Minneapolis. So part of it is just awareness. So we have to make sure that these metrics are front and center, top of mind, and that we're holding people accountable to them. So in answer to your political question, there will be a political decision made sometime in the 2019 or 2020 legislature about whether we're going to increase performance-based standards, because remember that 2007 Next Generation Energy Act, we're doing well on the renewable energy standard, but we don't yet have a plan in the state for accomplishing the 80% economy-wide reductions. You mentioned the McKnight-funded study. This is very interesting, and actually on Tuesday that study will be heard in the Minnesota legislature, because it's fascinating. It's looking at the fact that decarbonization of the electric sector is happening faster than you probably thought, which is very good news. We think that that sector will go to zero carbon more quickly than 2030 or 2035. But the other sectors haven't found the cost-effective substitutes for fossil fuels. So that's part of the blockage there. So we think we don't have any time to waste. The IPCC was very clear that we need to be on a path in 10 years to achieving those deep carbon reductions. We don't have to achieve them all in 10 years, but we need pathways forward. And so when you're talking about reducing big tons quickly, we have to think about moving everything possible onto the electric sector. So this is going to be a big change for everyone in Minnesota. And everyone in this country, essentially what it means is, starting with transportation, the best thing to do first is switch from diesel buses to electric buses. Makes sense, perfect for correcting some social inequities as well, making things better, clearer air for everyone, and then electrifying transportation. That McKnight study looked at, how do we achieve at least 80% reductions across the economy in Minnesota? And they found a number of pathways forward, all of which saved consumers money and saved power companies money. Good news. And what they mean, what the heart of it is instead of 80% reduction in the power sector, we need to get 91% reduction in carbon in the power sector, because more things, electricity, home water heating, business water heating, and air heating of all of our homes has to move toward electricity at zero carbon. So we call it beneficial electrification with decarbonization. And the savings to households would be at least $600 a year. And the good news is there would be an additional growth in clean energy jobs, three times the clean energy jobs we have now. And many of the jobs would be in the utilities themselves. So they've been worried about becoming irrelevant and not seeing their loads grow, and now they have the opportunity to greatly grow their loads with fresh energy supports when they're growing those loads with zero carbon electricity, if that answers your question.
Hello. I was wondering what you think about the fossil fuel divestment movement and if it's plausible in a state or local level.
I think it's a growing movement. It's about $8 trillion committed to divestment right now, and that's up from $6 trillion last year this time. I was looking at my slides for class, so really hopeful thing moving forward. And I think it's something that's very everyone has the power to start working on divestment in whatever type of institution you're a part of. So whether that's a city, whether it's a university or college, we're actually meeting with our investment committee at St. Ben's next week to start the conversation about divestment there. Hoping we'll see where that goes. But we have a lot of students really fired up about it. So I think it's. The goal of the divestment movement is not to, it realizes that it can't affect the bottom line really of the fossil fuel industry, but it's more about changing the discourse, making it a moral question of whether our investments should be killing the planet, especially when we think about institutions that have some type of moral component, like faith-based institutions or nonprofit organizations or education institutions. In education in particular, we shouldn't be, our environments that are supporting students shouldn't be sending them on to a dystopian future by furthering the fossil fuel industry. So I think it has a really powerful moral argument that we need a lot more of, because if more people saw that aspect of this, we would probably have a lot more people on board to making the change.
Hello, thank you for coming tonight. I'm a scientist by training, and I'm very data-driven. However, I'm convinced that in this current climate, science and data don't matter, and people on one side of our political spectrum are acting almost like zealots. So in that climate, I don't expect NGOs or even professors, academics, even students, the young generation, to be able to apply sufficient pressure for us to be where we need to be as fast as we need to get there. I want to ask, focus specifically on the corporate sector, where I feel that this is really the audience for the leaders of this country and partially the state that can affect change. But even though I applaud 3M and Target and others who take the right steps, Ecolab in the state as well, I think that we need to have a much more coordinated action and work through the Chamber of Commerce and other corporate vectors to apply pressure. And we have to counteract ALEC and organizations like that who operate in the opposite direction.
I think you raise a really good point, and thank you for the opportunity for that, because I wanted to make sure that at some point this evening before we finished up, I did voice that I think corporations have a fundamental opportunity and responsibility to really make a difference in the sustainability-related challenges we face, whether it's climate, whether it's raw material, wastewater, you name it. I think corporations really have a unique role in that. And while I certainly spent a lot of time in school, I really didn't get a lot of exposure to government entities until I was in a role related to sustainability, and it became very clear to me that there are more efficiencies and more ways that corporations can actually move more quickly many times than governments can. And it's also more clear in terms of the immediate payback and feedback in a corporation with the investments. Now, I will tell you that we agonize about things happening quickly or enough, or agonize about investments that don't pay off quickly enough. But it is something where corporations can make a profound difference. And so that's something that we're really committed to as far as our integrity as an organization. And it happens, it can never happen alone either. So whether it's when we're partnering with customers or insisting on requirements with our suppliers, you talked about some great examples with companies requiring their suppliers to be reducing carbon. Similar, those are things that we have conversations with our suppliers all the time, and we do the same for our customers who come to us. There's also a number of global sustainability organizations that we participate in. One of the ones I have most involvement in is the World Business Council for Sustainable Development. It's an organization with over 200 members, corporations from all over the world that are committed to advancing sustainability and to collaborating amongst each other to find the real solutions to things. Because sometimes there's challenges, and the challenges for governments to do. We need to partner together, though, because there's certain things that are easier for governments to do, like regulations, and there's certain things for corporations to advance, like science, like things that will sell products and so on. And so when you look at fundamentally the megatrends that we're facing, that's where corporations have a business opportunity there at the same time.
I give about 60 presentations a year, mostly around Minnesota, but around the country, and it's fascinating for me to see when I talk about examples from Minnesota of businesses I know that are taking action, people in the audience who weren't writing anything down before pull out a piece of paper and a pen and start writing it down or start photographing what slide is on the screen.
definitely corporations have a lot of power. I'm a Minnesotan by choice. I grew up in New York. I came here to go to graduate school, and I stayed because I like the civic engagement in this state. And I'll give you an example you may not know about. For the last 2 years, many of the Fortune 500s, smaller companies, the utility companies, I saw Dana Slade here earlier from Health Partners. Health Partners is part of this in the U, are part of a sustainable growth coalition. And they started out 2 years ago, it's Minnesota. So when they were talking about sustainable growth, the first thing that came to mind, they started working on water. And within a few months, it was interesting because I think Target was the first entity that brought it to the table, but others chimed in. They were looking at, remember those cost curves declining 90% for the cost of solar? They started realizing maybe we should start with solar energy and wind energy undercutting the cost for the first time of fossil fuels. Maybe we should push very hard to get to 100% renewable energy first before we think about water. And they have done that. And now they just came out with an agreement while we were in Poland. They were meeting and finalizing an agreement that their shared goal is to surpass the state's Next Generation Energy Act goals of 80% reduction. And specifically, a number of companies have started to talk to the Minnesota Chamber, and they started to talk to the legislators because they're saying, we can't meet our greenhouse gas emission reduction goals with the state still burning so much coal, or unless the state has performance-based standards to phase out that coal and replace it. So I think a lot is happening and changing going forward. And what holds it back is we need to, thank you for coming out today again, because we need to be sitting in the same room talking to each other and looking at each other and then sharing these stories more widely. Not just to share them, hey, isn't it good, and patting ourselves on the back. I hope Mark agrees with this, but how can we ratchet this up? How can we move forward? How can we get other states to do what Minnesota is doing? How can we get other utilities to do what Xcel Energy is doing? And what I tell my friends at Xcel Energy, this is not going to be a surprise to them, is how can we get Xcel Energy to move even faster? Because that is actually what the science says. We're going to turn it back to Tim now. Is that right?
One more question. I would love to continue talking all night. This has been so informative and so fascinating and inspiring. But we do have time for one more question.
Thank you. I just wanted to relate to what Jay said earlier. We don't have time to wait. What made me think of, recently, I read an article from a national magazine warning us about Florida, about because of the temperature, the water rising. And it's not just, we always think it's because part of Florida will be underwater. But something that really scares me, and that is the aquifer for fresh water is being invaded because of the temperature change. And it's predicting that it will be even sooner than worrying about the land underwater. That Florida will not have enough fresh water to drink. Now, then back to what all of you said about policy. And policy is related to politics. But I have yet to read anything about the Florida legislation being ready or discuss it in any part of the agenda. Please comment.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with that. But you raised the point, what the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change said really clearly in the fall of last year is, we are in a climate disaster. And it will take amazing, unprecedented levels of cooperation and working together. So maybe that's what should give us pause. We haven't seen it in a long time in our country. But I hope that we've given you some examples tonight and a view from someone who's much younger than I am, going to her first COP, that it's actually a hopeful message going forward. And I think what will move people forward is that we are not alone. A lot of the examples we gave you are entities based in Minnesota that are doing things that perhaps you did not know about. And we need to raise the profile of those, but insist that we get more positive stories faster. And I think now we'll turn it over to Mark Ritchie to close us out.
Let's thank this amazing panel.
There were a lot of aspects of this evening's program that were really special, and one of them was all of you who had to explain to somebody why, if you didn't show home at a certain time, you know, who to call. But the most important thing was that we saw the really how the future is unfolding about how we tackle things that we didn't know, but all of a sudden we're confronted with them. And both the examples from the COP and the examples from 3M were about something that we often call governing by goals or setting goals and making goals the way that we drive things. And for Global Minnesota, we'll be thinking about and bringing those issues out, because at a global level, there aren't governments, but there can be governance. There cannot be global regulations, but we can set ambitions, very high ambitions, and we can push each other and help each other and even nudge the Dutch and perhaps even the Norwegians, depending if you catch them at something, you know. So, and anyhow, this will be part of our future together going forward. I want to say to those of you who specifically are here on the question of climate, there's just a bunch of really fun ways to get more of this. If you're young and like beer, Climate Generation is be at the Sisyphus Bar with a trivia on climate next week on February 6th, and I have the leaflet if you want it. Our friends at the Como Health Partners Clinic, I go to that clinic, they have a climate working group, and they were a little less hardy, and they postponed their climate change and health community workshop to next week. Maybe just so that we could go. But in any case, Como Park Health Partners Health and Community Climate Forum. Good Lord. I guess in every neighborhood.
Yeah. Can I just mention one more
yeah.
thing? Thank you, Mark. Fresh Energy loves meeting you in person, but we really love more knowing what you care about. So what drives you, as you mentioned, what drives you in thinking about climate change? So we have these little postcards, clean energy future with our pollinator-friendly solar garden on the front. And we have it at the table outside. We hope we'll fill it up. There's plenty of white space for you to say what motivates you. So we see ourselves as representing many Minnesotans as an NGO, and we want to more accurately reflect that. So please fill that out and come talk to me at the table afterwards.
Great. And at the university, the Institute of the Environment has a special program on solar as an economic and economic victory on February 11th. And I have more paper on those. I have little articles about the fabulous announcement from 3M, what Xcel has done. And Jay has an amazing webinar that's online if you go to Fresh Energy about the COP. And it was listen to it today. And thank you very much. So.